Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Off the Grid. I am here in Las Vegas, and I have the pleasure and the honor of interviewing my old teammate, Adewale Ogunleye. Check it out. What up, everybody? It's your main man, Spice Adams. This is another edition of Off the Grid. It's a pleasure and an honor to be sitting next to royalty. This is my guy. Played in the league for 11 years, undrafted, came through the ranks, powerful guy, strong guy, none other than Adewale Ogunleye. Did I say that correctly? Yeah. Known you for 17 years, and I never really,
You did a good job,
is it
Spice.
Ogunleye?
Ogunleye.
Ogunleye, thank you. Ogunleye. Woo!
Yeah, you did a good job.
Woo. Staten Island?
Staten Island.
Staten Island, son. Do you say son?
Shaolin.
Do you say son?
When I'm talking to my son, yes. When I'm talking to my real son, yes.
You done dropped some son a couple of days. Yo, son.
Sure, son.
Yeah. You listen to that woo?
Yeah.
That sure. Woo? Hey, you know we had our playlist. We go back and forth like, we be listening to Nas and all that in the locker room, man. How was your journey like, dude? Like, because you from Staten Island. Like, how'd you end up in Indiana?
Oh, man, I don't even know. It's so crazy. When I started playing football, it was really just to, get out and hang with the fellas more because my parents were super strict. Wasn't thinking I was going to go to college or anything about it, let alone the league. But I started playing football and there was a coach, I think from UMass, my sophomore year, came by and said something to my high school coach, yo, if he keeps playing like this, we're going to be back for him. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time, it sparked in my mind, I might be able to go to college to play football. So then that kind of put the battery in my back. And then, next couple of years, I did extremely well. And the first kind of, big Division I school that recruited me was Indiana. Mm-hmm. Again, not thinking league. I'm just thinking, let me go get a free education. Mm-hmm. Both my parents had their master's degrees, and they're still, at the time, were paying for their education. So a free scholarship for me and a way out, kind of out of the hood. I was like, man, let's go to Indiana. So I went to Indiana, and I was there in December on a visit. And a funny story I'm going to tell you about Penn State in a second.
I already know what you're going
to
say.
I went to Indiana. I think it was December sometime. And the temperature was 70 degrees in December. And the campus was beautiful. And I was just like, I got to come here. Because we can have winters that look like this. For the next 4 years, I didn't have a day over 10 degrees in December. So that was false advertisement. But that's how I got to Indiana. But what I was going to say to you about Penn State, which is so funny, when it comes to football, there's no comparison, right? You got Joe Pa at Penn State, and I think your D-line coach, I want to say it's Joe Sarah.
I was just talking to Mike Robb about Joe Sarah.
Came to Tottenville High School in Staten Island, New York, because he wanted to hear
that's his area.
Because hear about this kid that he needs to take a look at. And on the film, he sees some skinny kid on there, and he's like, this the kid y'all wanted me to come out here to see? Took his bag, got up, and left. I didn't even get to talk to Joe. Principal's like, hey, Penn State's here. I'm like, oh, really? I'm about to get the... Joe watched a couple minutes of film on me and was like,
you have an interesting journey.
Man, yeah, so crazy, man. Yeah.
So how much did you weigh in high school?
Because
I've been like this since 12.
Jeez. 12?
I was 300 at 12.
I think I was probably around 210.
That ain't bad.
Maybe 185, I think. I was playing safety.
I did not know this.
Yeah, so I was playing safety until my junior year.
I didn't know that.
Actually, my freshman year, I was playing receiver. I wore number 80. I was Jerry Rice.
Wow.
So Jerry Rice. I couldn't catch a cold. and then my coach put me at safety, which...
I saw you try to catch in practice, so that makes sense.
Yeah, whatever. Listen, I got how many interceptions you got?
I got one, but it's considered a fumble recovery.
Is it an interception in the book?
I don't have an interception.
No, see, I got one. I got one more than you.
Okay.
So I don't want to hear about the hands. But anyway, I even forgot what we were talking about, but
we're talking about how skinny you were.
Oh yeah, I was like 185, and I think I got up to like maybe like 210. Mm-hmm. I was playing D tackle.
Ooh,
D tackle.
You didn't get away with that in high school, though.
Yeah, yeah, I did. But I was this long, lanky kid, and then my senior year, I went to the end, and you know, West was history, and Indiana. I even redshirted that first year, so I didn't even play right out the gate because I didn't think I was ready for the pros. I mean, not even pros for college, let alone making it to the NFL for 11 years.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, you go undrafted, and then your first year, I think you got injured, right? Mm. Like you got you.
No, it was actually my senior year in Indiana. I was preseason All-American. I was actually. At the time, it was me, I think Courtney Brown. We were like Playboy All-Americans, but I think Courtney like had some religious beliefs.
So he didn't want
to
go.
And he didn't come to the Playboy shoot. So I was like, I'm going to go.
That ain't got nothing to do with me.
Yeah, I'm still going to go. But that's how good of a career I was having. And what's so even funny, in one of Mel Kiper's draft predictions, going into my senior year, I was the number one draft pick. And like Courtney was number two. Mm-hmm. So we go into my senior year at Indiana, and I'm having now the best year I've ever had. Now, I've already been preseason All-American, but I'm already having like the best year. I think I got like 7 sacks in like 5 games. Mm-hmm. And then I tear my ACL. Mm-hmm. Not only my ACL, my ACL, my PCL, my LCL, all the L's in the knee were gone. Tore some meniscus, and to add injury onto insult, I got a staph infection in the surgery. Damn. So now, by the time I got to my senior year in college, I was already 275 pounds. When I got done with the staph infection in the surgery, I was back down to like 210. Mm. So I go from first round draft pick to undrafted, and even on draft day, I got a call from like the New York Jets in the second round. They were like, listen, we're thinking about taking you in this next pick. Next pick comes, they don't take me.
This is 2000?
Yeah, it's 2000. Next pick comes, I mean, whatever the pick the draft the Jets were going to take, they don't take me. Mm-hmm. Actually, at the time, they took John Abraham and Sean Ellis, 2 first rounders, too. And they call back and they say, hey, listen, if we don't draft you this in the draft, think about signing with us as a free agent. Now, this is back in the day, I think, when the draft was like 3 days. I'm thinking, like, what are you talking about? You're not going to draft me. It's second round.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting drafted. And I started getting calls like, listen, if you don't get drafted, we want you to think about signing with us as a free agent. So the next day, draft, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the days, the rounds go, and I didn't get the call. And I go undrafted. I sign at the time then with the Miami Dolphins. And from that, it's the rest is history. From what I remember now, though, from what I understand, there was a doctor with the San Francisco 49ers, your team, who gave me like a failing grade of my knee in the middle of the draft. And from that, I think my stock just plummeted, and I wind up having to sign with the Dolphins.
And how many years did you play for the Dolphins? And you were there with Jason Taylor.
Yeah, JT.
Yeah. Jason Taylor. He was cool, like he took you on his wing, or?
Jason was a great vet, man. I think I had some really good vets on that team. We had a guy named Tim Bowens.
Yeah, I
remember. Big Tim Bowens. He was actually rookie of the year one time as a D-tackle. Jason Taylor, Patrick Surtain Sr., mm-hmm. Sam Madison.
Zach
Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had some dogs. Yeah.
Even played with the late great Junior Seau too. So wind up playing there for about 4 years. First year the Dolphins allowed me to kind of be on IR to kind of keep rehabbing that knee that I had tore in college. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, you know, I was a backup but still just watching Jason and seeing how professional he was and how he rushed the passer. And my game wasn't his game. You know, I wanted to be able to stop the run and rush the pass at the same time. And I wanted to be a complete defensive end, you know, unlike you know, the Alex Browns of the world.
Shout out to AD, man.
Yeah, AD, I'm just joking with you, man. But I wanted to feel like I was a complete defensive end where I had to, you know, take on a tight end, then a tackle, and and play the run. But it was a great experience. So I enjoyed it. I went from now an undrafted free agent to a starter in the AFC Pro Bowl, led the league in sacks with 15 sacks that year. And so it was a great story.
All right, let's rewind it back, man. How were your parents? Because it seemed like your parents were more for your education than sports. I know they was like, okay, you playing football, yeah, that's good. But what about your grades? Like, how were they when it came to you playing football?
Man, it was so great. I mean, it's funny you asked that question because my junior year in high school, my grades were starting to slip. Right. Mm-hmm. I was doing sports now and I was, you know, starting to like girls and be more, you know, my attention was moving away from my books.
Yeah.
And my parents brought me to school to talk to my coach and told my coach and said, hey, listen, if Wale doesn't get his grades up, we're sending him to Africa. Like, he's going to Africa. Mm. And now that I look back at it, I'm like, my parents would have not. They would have sent me to Africa.
They were trying to scare you?
Yeah,
or
I think they was.
Okay.
Because they always threatened to send me to Africa, but they wanted to just keep me out of trouble, man. Like, you know, the 90s in New York was crazy. Like, it was gangs, it was drugs, and they just didn't want me not to focus on my education. So my high school coach said, hey, listen, let's work with him. I promise we'll get his grades up. And if we do, there's a chance he can go to college for free.
Mm-hmm.
Playing football. And I swear to God, I think a life.
Where are your parents originally from?
They're from Nigeria.
Nigeria, okay.
Nigerian there parents, yeah. Okay. So education is really, like, it's the biggest thing for them. And then when my coach said that I can go to college for free, you could see the light bulbs go off their heads. They were like, wait, this barbaric sport that you guys play in America, he's going to get a free scholarship.
Hold on. How did they say it?
He's going to get a free scholarship. And my coach was like, yeah. Man, my mom bought the pom-poms. She was at the games cheering me on from then on because they were still paying off their student loans themselves. Mm-hmm. And for me to go to college and, you know, be a black man in America with a free education, that was the ultimate American dream. That was the beginning of, you know, what you were going to do next. It wasn't going to go to the league. And so that was good for them. Education was big. Like, even like I say now, like, I'm a Pro Bowl player, played in the NFL for 11 years, made a decent amount of money. But in my house, I've got my degree from Indiana University. My sister, I got my Pro Bowl, you know, plaques, whatever. My sister's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the queen of the house just because she's a doctor. I'm like, but mom, I mean, I made all this money.
Bowl,
I'm a Pro Bowl guy. I'm a captain. Was captain of the team. Went to Super Bowl. I'm like, yeah, but your sister's a doctor. So that's the Nigerian house, man. So that's
like, yeah, you're done with all that. Your sister, she's still a doctor.
Straight up.
Like, you know, you're not still a NFL player. Like, you know what I mean?
Washed up.
So Agunleye, mm-hmm. let's break that down. Like, mm-hmm. when I first started this off, I said I'm sitting next to royalty. Can you explain the royalness?
Oh, man.
I never asked you this, but, you know, the world needs to know.
No,
man.
I mean, the world needs to move on.
This is the iron guy that I'm talking to, right?
Well,
when we played Scrabble, I got a basic name, Anthony Adams. Whoa, I'm playing against Iron God?
Jesus, come on, man. Unbelievable. So the way it works, you know, Ogunleye is actually the god of iron. Ogun is the god of iron in Yoruba culture in Nigeria. Yeah. And
I'm so glad you're answering this question because if the cameras weren't here, you would not answer this question.
So it is the god of iron in the Yoruba culture in Nigeria. And Adewale actually can mean two things. He can mean joy has come home or the crown has returned or come home. So my dad's father was we call it the Oba, but the king, or in American terms, maybe the governor of a certain state. The only thing is these type of positions are passed down through bloodline. So the Oba in translation in English is the king. My dad's father was the king. So obviously everybody else through old traditional terms, his descendants are, you know, princes and princesses. So that's where I get the whole, you know, all the jokes that you guys were saying.
I've never joked.
I mean, like, he's got his own money. Like, come on. The coming to America jokes was a little crazy. Come on. Like, let's be honest, man.
Hey,
like,
man, I just got on the team in 2007. So, like, y'all took that and ran with it, man.
You ran with it. They gave it to you. You ran with it. Yeah. So, but it's okay. You've come a long way.
But talk to the people about just like that grind of being undrafted, man. It's like you come into the league with a chip on your shoulder. Like, you know you could play, you know you could ball, but it's like, what? Like, you were, come on, like, you preseason All-American, like, all this stuff, and then you don't get drafted. Like, let everybody know what it's like that grind of being undrafted.
I mean, it's something you can't even really explain, I think. You know, when you're an undrafted free agent, training camp is a very stressful time, right? Every snap to you is like life or death.
Yeah.
Every pass rush, practice, drill. Like, I look back at it now, like, I used to stress on if I didn't do well in every pass rush drill. Like, that doesn't even make any sense to us. But when you're an undrafted free agent, you know, everything you do, you don't want to waste a rep.
Yeah.
And, you know that just the way politics work, you come into camp probably not going to make the 53, right? You know the coaches have who they have to play, who is getting paid. You know half the room upstairs in the GMs don't care for you, and the other half may. You might have one fan upstairs, the guy who got you to come to sign as a free agent. So that's a tough position to be in, right? Coaches are going to focus on the starters, the guys that they think are going to help the team win. And they may give you a couple of reps here and there, and you better make the most of it. Yeah. So that grind's tough. But for me, I think, you know, I looked at it as I know what I'm capable of. I know I was a preseason All-American. I was a three-time All-Big Ten player. I knew I could play. And really, for me, it was just trying to get healthy and get on the field. So, you know, eventually when I did get healthy, I showed that I belonged.
So how did you choose Miami? Because it's like, you know, I can't go to the Jets. Like, y'all drafted a DN. You drafted, like, y'all.
Exactly.
Like, did you go through, like, all the teams and was like, okay, Miami, they didn't draft a DN or whatever it may be. Yep. You know, I may get more reps.
Absolutely. That's okay. What I did. So what I did was, I knew I was going to have to redshirt. I was going to have to be on IR for probably a year. And what I did was I looked at teams that had veterans that signed deals and deals that were coming due soon. So the Dolphins had a guy named Trace Armstrong as a starter. Knew he was getting a little older in age, and I knew he's probably going to play another year or two. They had another guy named Lorenzo Brumel, Kenny Mixon, who kind of were in the mix but didn't have any long-term deals. The only solid person they had was Jason Taylor. So I knew first year I can come in, be on IR. They're not going to trip because they don't need the help from the defensive ends position. And that's what I did with most of the teams that I looked at. I said, the teams that wanted me. But I was like, who of these teams has the opportunity for me to just the comfortability of the luxury of me sitting on the bench for a whole year and them not tripping? And the Dolphins fit the right mold. And then also Dave Wannstedt had a relationship with Indiana in the sense that his daughters went to Indiana with us, and he was familiar with my game.
Shout out to Coach Wani, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my dude, man.
Yeah, man.
So you ball out, you make the Pro Bowl, everything going good, ESPN, bottom line ticker, Marty Booker gets traded. Was that a shock to you? Like, you're like, hey, man, I'm the guy, I'm part of the defense, and I get traded?
Coming off a Pro Bowl season. Like, you led the AFC in sacks. And I'm sitting in a comedy, I'm in a comedy show, and you know, my agent at the time, Drew Rosenhaus, texted me. He's like, hey, you're getting traded to Chicago. I was like, how much are they paying me?
Is this part of the comedy show here?
I'm like, exactly, right? So I was actually on a date at the time, too. And he's like, you get traded to Chicago. I was like, but how about the contract? He's like, well, we ain't figured out the contract yet. I was like, okay, that's going to be interesting. And I was happy because I know I was probably going to get, you know, finally get paid. But I was down because I'm like, man, we just talked about, like, undrafted free agent, busting my tail to get back into the limelight, made it all the way to a starter in the Pro Bowl, you know.
Things is looking up.
Man, dude. And now I'm getting traded?
Did you get a house and everything?
So first, when I got to Chicago?
No. In Miami.
Yeah, I had a house. Yeah, I had bought a house. It's 4 years already now.
Yeah.
And not only 4 years, but I'm solid. Like, I'm like the people's champ. You know, I was more like touchable. Jason was kind of like, you know, like the
he's doing the Jordan
celebrity like, guy, right?
Like when he's got touchdowns.
Yeah, he's on a golf course with Jordan.
He was one wearing a Jordan cleats. We're like, oh, how do you even get those?
Right,
like,
right. He was in a whole different echelon of it. So I was kind of like the people's champ. You know, I had to go out to the local spots and you know, the local other spots that I can't talk about on this thing, but people love me there, right? And I love them too. And I think that for me hurt the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have a house. I actually kept the house for a long period of time. I think it was actually a great investment to have that house. But I kept the house, and every off season I would run home after we got done with the season in Chicago. And then speaking about a home, I thought you were asking about Chicago because I was so depressed after that trade. For like the first 3-4 months, I just stayed in like a Motel 6. So I had all this money, and I was sitting in a Motel 6 in Chicago, like in like Waukegan, and depressed. Just come on to practice, and
Waukegan?
Yeah, somewhere. It was, dude. You know, I'm pulling into a Motel 6 extended stay
in a Bentley.
Depressed. All the money in the world, because I felt like nobody, like the team that should want to fight for me and keep me, didn't want me.
But they got no idea, man. We be going through this stuff,
dude. Oh, man, they don't know it, dude.
They don't care. Just play ball, man.
That's it. So, and then you got to listen, and I got to come into a locker room like I'm saying.
Our locker room was dope, though, dog.
Guys like Izzy and.
Okay, look, was the Bears locker room better than Miami's locker room? I mean, this is a.
Oh man!
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Can I ask you?
I had way more fun.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Was San Fran's locker room better than Chicago's locker room?
I had way more fun in Chicago's locker room than I did in the 49ers. Wasn't even close. Dude, you know what we was doing? Yeah. We was playing basketball. We was playing baseball. We had that four square game. Remember we do the basketball game where we would like you would shoot like a Spider-Man ball off of the ledge of it. Man, we had so much fun in there, man.
I think Chicago's locker room was by far the most fun.
And you've been in three locker rooms because you spent time with the Texans too.
Yeah, we don't even talk about that. don't even discuss that.
I mean, it was 1 year, but
I mean. That, I mean.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't even discuss that.
Yeah.
You can just say I played 10 years in NFL because. But the Chicago Bears locker room was so fun. But the problem with Miami's locker room was that you had the same amount of jokesters.
Mm-hmm.
But the nightlife, like what we would do after, but we more like we would hang out more, like DBs and D-line, like stuff we do in the locker room, like we go out and do that. Mm-hmm. So like the Pat Surtains and Sam Madison's, like my first time I ever flew on a private jet was with Sam Madison. He's like, we're going to New York. I said, you taking me? Like, all right, let's go. So I'm on a plane by myself. He got all his people on there, so it was a great atmosphere. I do think both locker rooms were really good. I would give Chicago the locker room essence of itself. Like, if I say I miss a locker room, I'm talking about that locker room with you guys. Like, it was the so much fun.
Dodgeball.
Dodge
Remember
ball.
Dodgeball?
Oh, man. The only, I just can't, like, when B.A. put the shaving cream in my eyes. Like, my eyes still, like, my eyes
Tommy,
water.
Tommy was telling me about
my
that.
My eyes water up.
He said he never saw you, like, so mad
like,
before.
Like, if you, my eyes start to water up just because it's a reaction to how bad that situation was. Like, so Brendan Imendejo slapped me in the face with some shaving cream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he knew that it burns. I think he was like,
it's supposed to be like whipped cream. It was supposed
whipped
to be.
Cream.
Right.
He put shaving cream. I wanted to kill him. Like, my eyes are watering right now, dude. Like, it's a crazy. I get a reaction. That's how bad. Like, bro, I am starting to tear up.
Brendan Imendejo. This
yeah.
is your fault, man.
Man, dude, look at my
His
eyes.
Eyes are still struggling right now because of you. Because of you.
That's funny, man.
So the transition,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I try to tell everybody about this, man, because everybody's different. Like, when you got to give it up, when you got to retire from the game, it is a beast, man. You don't have a set schedule. You don't have to be anywhere at 8 a.m. You don't have 60,000 people screaming your name, and it's just you alone with your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And how am I going to get this money? How am I going to make up for all the money that I was bringing in, and like, what am I gonna do now? Like, what was that struggle like for you? Because it was a struggle for me, but everybody, you know, takes on these things differently.
I think it was a struggle for me too. I think one, even like, I struggled with even with people like recognizing me in Chicago. Like, I struggled with that part of it. So I kind of was happy that I didn't have to like be put on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what these young players are going on now with social media.
Yeah.
They're in the limelight of that. But I think for me, quickly I got into the Star Ember program when I got done. I'm so glad because there was a void.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like a routine, get up, go work out. You know, like, I needed to stay in that. I needed to stay traveling. I just got up and did random business calls and meetings with people because I just felt like I just had to fill that void that I have.
So real quick, mm-hmm. let me let everybody know, Star Ember program, I did it as well. I did it while I was still playing. So this is a chance for us to get our executive masters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a shout out to Star Ember, everybody who started it and everything.
Yeah, Michael that was Lickott, great program.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
think
yeah.
for one, it helped us, you know, just start thinking about, and the funny thing about it, I think a lot of guys that were in that program and wives and women that were in that program, they're on doing a lot of different stuff. It was a great way to get you into transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that program for me helped jumpstart, you know, me into my current career now. But it was tough, man. You know, I think this is a time where you see gentlemen, you know, start having, you know, chemical dependencies, you know, alcoholism, drug mm-hmm. use. This is a really high time for athletes to, you know, in divorcing.
Yeah.
And divorce rate is really high with athletes when they start to leave the league.
Yep.
And that's because, you know, you think you've lost your sense of your identity, right? Like, this is what everyone thinks of me as. So that transition period can be tough for most of the guys. And, like, even, like, I was listening to Tom Brady the other day. Like, he was even thinking about coming back because that's all he knows.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, I felt the same way. Like, I got to figure out how can I fill this void. And luckily, I quickly, you know, got into the program and just stayed busy.
So can you explain to everybody your position? And first of all, congratulations with UBS. That is awesome. How did you get that position? And was that like a difficult transition to go from, you know, football to like, hey, you know, I work for UBS now. Mm-hmm. Like, that's when you told me that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, not like,
yeah.
Wale could never do anything. Like, it was just like, dude, like I was happy, dog. Like, I felt like I was a part of UBS.
Yeah, well, you helped me like kick it off first with recording like some financial literacy stuff for me.
That was
when
fun.
First
dude.
Started. That was I really appreciate you on that.
That was fun.
When I full disclosure, I was actually a client of UBS, and I just appreciated the way they talked to me about my finances, like, am I investing? So I went to the head of private wealth, this guy named John Matthews, along with my advisors at the time, Mike Singh and Eric Delquist. And I said, listen, man, I know you guys are good at managing money, but you don't have like this one spot where you can say this is a business, a division that we have. And when I got to UBS, you know, I realized like, oh my God, we have the biggest names in basketball and baseball, football. We have NFL owners, basketball owners, like billionaires at our firm. One out of every two billionaires banks at UBS. It's one of the biggest wealth managers in the world. And I said, I think if we put some resources behind what we do, we can help teach our clients how to really invest in the sports entertainment space. We can help teach advisors how they should deal with guys like Spice Adams and Adewale Ogunleye. And when I say that, I want to say, like, you know, why is Spice so close to his mother? Why is Spice a good husband to his wife and have beautiful kids that he takes care of? And why does Wale want to take care of his parents and help them, you know, build a home in Nigeria? I think those are the things that I think financial advisors, when it comes to dealing with athletes and entertainers, they actually forget. Mm-hmm. It's too transactional. It's not relationships. And UBS agreed with my approach that we want to make sure that we have real relationships with our clients. And they said, all right, Wale, why don't you help us build this out? Help us find a guy that we can help run the business. So for the next 3 years, I just helped. We looked around, we consulted, we tried to figure out how this was going to look. And I think this is like almost like a 5-year process. And after the fifth year, 3 years of me looking, but two years of kind of like, you know, talking about it, they said, you know what? We love your passion. We are the experts when it comes to our finances, to managing money. Why don't you just run the whole thing? So I, you know, ran home and talked to my wife about it and told her what it's going to entail. You know, I do have my licenses. I can be a financial advisor, but right now my role is, you know, managing, you know, our sports entertainment division and making sure our advisors are doing and saying the right things. But more importantly, having, like I said, lasting relationships to where our clients can think about creating legacies. Mm-hmm. Like what you're doing right now with your career is creating a legacy. And you've done an amazing job on the field, but you're doing even a better job off the field. And that's where I want the financial industry to start focusing on, is life after, you know, those 15 minutes of fame that we have once mm-hmm. they're up. How are we going to help our young men and women transition and get to the place that our billionaire clients are?
So talk to the audience about goal power. So I remember I would come into the locker room on Tuesdays on our day off, try to get, you know, work out or whatever, and you would be in the meeting room, and it'd just be a bunch of kids in there, and you'd like on a podium talking to these kids. I'm like, man, we got a day off. This man, it is buses outside. It is 75-100 kids in here, and you in here spending your time with the kids, talking to them. And it's never been a Thanksgiving that has went by where you haven't come back to the city of Chicago right. and handed out turkeys. Right. Now, you and I haven't played in the NFL for like over 10 years at this point. It's never been a Thanksgiving right. that I've, where you haven't been in the city giving out yeah. turkeys. Like, why do you do it?
I think it goes back to my parents, man. I think they, you know, they came from Nigeria, didn't have a pot to piss in when they got here. And we lived, it was like, I would say, six of us in a 2-bedroom apartment. And, you know, me and my brother would have to share a room, the living room. And, you know, my mom would put a drape up and put a bunk bed in the middle of our living room. And that was our bed. That was our bedroom. And then my sisters would, you know, would share a room. And then someone would come from Nigeria, and they'd be like, yeah, you can stay with us. Like, what you mean you can stay with us? We ain't got no place to stay ourselves.
Yeah.
But that level of giving, of always, like, doing more for people, you know, always sat in me. And I think when it was my time, and God, and I think it's because of that, honestly, I think because my parents were so giving to people, I think that's why her kids, my parents' kids were blessed. And this is my way of saying, listen, I got to give back. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why God chose me to be the one guy out the hood, other than Wu-Tang, and, you know, and a few other guys to kind of make it. But why did he choose us? I don't know. But I'm going to do my best to come back to, you know, Park Hill, where I grew up, to give turkeys, and then also to the city that, you know, and the place that I kind of was able to get the money, right? Mm-hmm. I got my big contract, and come back to the city of Chicago and give back. So every Thanksgiving, that's just a little thing that I do. And the funny thing about it is that, you know, I round up a ton of my friends. You are one of the most supportive friends that we have, Gold Power has, so thank you for that. But it's just us touching on our gifts that God has given us and want to give back to the community. And I think for Gold Power, for me, is teaching these young men and women that you might not be a Spice Adams, but there's so many things around Spice that make who you are. And that's what Gold Power was, right? So there's people here that has helped us with the production of this, even as this podcast, mm-hmm. right? There's your agent. There's the medical field. There's lawyers. There's all different coaches. There's all different mm-hmm. people around us that make decent amount of money within yeah. the sports and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And Gold Power started off with trying to teach these young men and women that you don't have to be the guy or the woman in front of the camera. You can be behind the camera and enjoy the perks of a good salary, but then also still loving the sport that you love.
Yeah. So talk to me about your wife, man. I went to the wedding, man. We had a great time, dude. And I was just like, this feels right, dude. This feels right. Your wife is a boss, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a dentist, and she has worked on some superstars. You know what I'm saying? So how proud are you of your wife?
I'm very proud. I think I am. I'm a really hard person to be married to, for sure.
I'll be admit, friends with, I'll comma.
Yeah, you don't have to go that far. I'm having a vulnerable moment right here.
Okay,
need you to like Sorry. Add
Shout
on
out to
it.
A mirror. What okay, up, baby?
So, but like, she meets me at my level of excellence. Like, mm-hmm. she's like, you know what, Wale? I've seen what you've done in your own life, but move over, old man. Like, watch what I'm about to do, right? And she's been trailblazing, you know, for our family. Been such a good example. Not only for my daughter, but both my kids. Like, they look at her and see how hard she works. Mm-hmm. She's balancing a career. She's balancing being a mother and, you know, being a wife to, you know, somebody who's as demanding as I am. And then also, she's just a great human being and a great friend to people. So she's doing her thing, and, you know, her star is just continuing to rise and rise. And I'm enjoying it, man, like, because mm-hmm. it's been really great. And what she does, you know, she's touching people. Like, yeah. you should see some of the things that she's doing with the creative things that she's doing with, you know, in dentistry to help people that have some bad medical issues with their mouths, and getting the confidence in some of these young men, some of these young women, that if they feel, you know, Dion says it, right? If you look good, you feel good, you play good. Mm-hmm. And she's helping people feel good about themselves. And I'm such a big fan of hers and super proud. And I just want to continue to help her in any way I can. And if that means even just staying out of her way as she, you know, as she continues to rise. But I'm so proud of her and love all the things she's doing.
What advice would you give, let's say, 20-year-old Wale? Like, you know, you hurt your knee, things ain't going the way that you want them to. What advice would you give to him?
You know, that's a great question, and I struggle with that one because I think about it a lot. I think for me, it probably have to be like, you know, enjoy the moment, man. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes I think I just don't enjoy the moment. But I say I struggle because I'm not sure if it's the fact that I was always on kept me hungry. Mm-hmm. And I was so afraid of, like, letting go and relaxing and not being on top of my game, and I'm not sure if that's what made me, you know, excel in what I did. But as I look back at things, I'm like, man, I was too tightly wound, man. I could have relaxed a little bit, you know. Mm. I could have enjoyed the moment and smelt the roses a little bit. And so I would tell 20-year-old Wale, like, tone it down just a little bit. Yeah. Like, enjoy yourself, just and enjoy, because you never know when you're going to be back, right? We went to the Super Bowl, and that was it. You know, so, and I look back at that Super Bowl, I'm like, damn, I didn't even really, like, soak it all in, because I was just involved in it. So I would tell 20-year-old Wale, like, try your best to enjoy the moment.
Yeah. Speaking of that, man, shout out to our guy, Devin Hester, man, Hall of Famer, man, now, dude. Did you ever get a chance to block for Hess? Or were you, I can't play special teams. I'm too important.
I'm sure I did.
No, man. On safe, punt safe.
Yeah.
No, that don't count.
Oh, that counts.
That does not count.
That counts.
Okay, you were on the field goal block and against the Giants?
No.
You weren't?
I didn't do none of that.
You didn't contribute to his Hall of Fame at all.
I did. Punt safe.
Punt safe don't count.
Oh, that counts.
How much blocking did you do on punt safe?
Listen, I went hard. I used to love that. Punt safe.
Me and Izzy was on kickoff return.
Listen, you guys are beasts. I ain't going to lie. What you guys used to do on kickoff returns was amazing. Like, you better have, Devin better have a bunch of gold jackets to go with him. One for you, one for Izzy, one for Brendan Iambadejo. Like, yeah, you were some killers for that, man, dude. Like, sass. So he better bring a couple more jackets to go. Cause, but we're happy for him, man. Congratulations to D-Hess.
Congratulations to D-Hess.
He should have went in a couple years ago, but we're going to enjoy this.
Congratulations to Julius Peppers.
Peppers in.
Yeah, man.
Dwight Freeney's in.
Yep.
I don't know. Who else? Anybody else going?
That we play. Andre Johnson.
Oh, man. I played with him for a year, so.
But you said you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about
Houston. I'll talk about that for that part.
What was the worst purchase you made? Like, you made it and you was just like, oh my God. Like, years went by and you were like, why did I buy that Rolls Royce?
I don't know. I'm pretty frugal.
Yeah, I know. But dude.
Whoa. Oh, time to check out.
Uh oh. That's bad. Hold on.
You wanna pick it up?
Yeah. Pick it up.
Spice Adams residence.
Wow. What a jerk.
Yes. No, we're checking out in a little bit after I get done with this interview. Thank you.
Oh, that was great, dude.
I haven't seen a phone like
this. What'd they say?
They were like, hey, are you going to stay another day? I was like, no, I'm checking out after this interview. I was like, okay, take your time.
Well, I guess that's our cue, man.
Yeah, ready to go.
It's something you bought that you were just like, man, why did I buy this? You know what I just bought, man? I just bought something to go inside of, like, my HVAC system. So, like, the scents could come out of,
oh,
like,
I got that, too. My fam. Wife did that.
It don't work, don't like though. It don't work.
Mine works. It actually smells good. It makes it smells like hotels when you walk into my house.
Yes.
Yes, my wife did
Mine does not work.
Oh, you need to get our guy, then. We got to get her.
You got a guy?
Yeah, I got a guy.
Oh, yeah. I need that.
No, I don't think. Listen, I'm so frugal, man. I mean, I bought a Bentley. Yeah, I got. But I enjoyed that Bentley.
You had a driver?
No, it was a two-door Bentley.
So, oh, okay.
I need to be. I have a Rolls Royce now, but I didn't buy that.
What about the fashion choices? Because you remember, sometimes you used to come to the locker room, you remember how big those suits were.
Yeah, oh man. Like, for real, like, I don't want to say no names, but some of them people that were selling us them suits.
We know.
They need to be slapped. They had us in
drapes. Remember we made that song, Zoot Suit Riot.
Zoot Riot.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, man. God, when we had the away trips and we had to come in with the suits, soon as Wale walked in the door, cue it. Zoot Suit Riot. Oh, man,
bro, it's like curtains, man.
Oh, man. We had a good time in that locker room, dog. Oh, man. But, hey, man, I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, sir.
My guy, dude.
Nah, man. Thank you.
I'm proud of you, man. You are a trailblazer. Dude, I love what you're doing with Gold Power. You know, I always support you, man, and everything that you do, man. And solid guy, man. This guy out of Wale. Oh, why did you were you tired of people butchering your name? So you just like, man, I'm just going to go with Wale, dude. Like, nobody could do out of Wale. Like, let's go Wale.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just like, you know what? I mean, it's not even the Wale part. It was the Ogunle. Like, people used to call me like Ogundele. Like, where's the D in that? Ogundele. Ogundele on the tackle. Ogundele? I'm like, you're not even trying. So that's where. And I shout out to our PR teams with the Miami Dolphins and the Chicago Bears. They made sure reporters, they made them try their best to say it's in my name correctly. But Wale's, you know, that's usually in Nigeria, like you can, like, it's Ade, while like you can always like, Adebayo, you call him Bayo, or Adedayo, which my sister, her name is Dayo, so you can shorten it.
Yeah. All right. Hey, man, appreciate your time, man. Off the Grid, my guy, out of Wale, we out, man.